Hey, Dave here from the Breakfast with Manny podcast, which comes from when my co-host Emmanuel, also known as Manny, and I used to meet regularly for breakfast. When we were discussing the shifting landscape of manhood, mostly by sharing our experiences and our struggles, as well as my coaching courses and my entrepreneurial experience, we realized many men could benefit from discussing these topics. So Breakfast with Manny is going to explore the unseen patterns that sabotage men from realizing their potential, healing, and getting the life, sex, career, and health they want, leading to a healthy masculine life. So hey everyone, welcome to Breakfast with Manny. I'm Dave Rosenberg, coach and entrepreneur here with my co-host Manuel Mancia, otherwise known as Manny. Hey Manny, how are you?
I'm doing really good. Cool, it's always exciting to see we have a guest with us. So
look, we're very privileged today. We have a special guest. Albert Besada is here. Hey Albert, how are you?
Hey guys, I'm good.
Good, Dave, good to see Manny. You. So we're going to continue our discussions around masculine and feminine energetics, how that might work in the world. You know, Albert, I've known you a while now. I've always been amazed at your breadth of experience around all different kinds of modalities, whether it's yoga, meditation, some of the other work that you do. And maybe what we'll do, Manny, before I pass it over to you is maybe, Albert, do you just want to say a few words about yourself? There's a little, whatever you want to tell the audience.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah. Sure. So I'm a hypnotherapist, yoga teacher, and family constellation facilitator. A father of three children, and just a seeker, I guess, seeker of mystery.
You know, good work.
Trying to get to the bottom of things.
Right? Nice.
What we are, why we are, you know, where we're going, where we're coming from.
Love it. Yeah, well, that's a big part of what I'm trying to do here, you know, is touch people. Some people maybe are on the cusp of seeking, and hopefully we can, you know, give them a little push to try some new things. So Manny, over to you for a couple of words.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Albert, is, you know, we've had a couple of guests now, and there's a big question that Dave and I have been asking ourselves and our guests. And, you know, the first question is about healthy masculinity. So we're simply wondering for you, you know, what is healthy masculinity, if that means anything?
God, that's a big question and a good question and a pertinent question, because it's something collectively that we're wondering about. But healthy masculinity for me is a strong, protective, secure presence. A presence that reassures, a presence that watches over others. You know, a presence that gives guidance, direction, gives motivation. A presence that maintains commitment. These are all qualities that I would say express healthy masculinity.
Mm. Did you always were aware of wanting to live, let's say, in that healthy masculinity? Would you say today you live a life in which you feel like you...
I think it's a work in progress. I think one of the most valuable elements of healthy masculinity, I think, is the quality of healthy discipline. And I think that I'm still working on that. You know, I'm still, these are things that we're always working on. I think when you are, I can't imagine anyone is as disciplined as they would like themselves to be, but definitely, I guess, I'd like to see myself more consistent with certain habits, and then I would be able to say, all right, you know, my discipline is good and strong.
You know, it's funny, we share that a bit. So, you know, and I think one of the things that's really important for the purposes of our podcast is for people to understand this is not sort of a soapbox where we go like, hey, everybody, look at Manny and I, or look at me, and like, I got it all together, like far from it. Mm-hmm. And I think part of what we're trying to share here is our struggles. Mm. I shared that struggle with you. We've talked about it. You know, I wish I were more disciplined. The never enough pattern definitely comes up a lot in humanity. Mm. We're going to get into subconscious patterns another day, but you know what you said, what hit me about what you said, I loved your description of it, but it also hit me that it doesn't, those qualities that you talked about, it doesn't matter what you look like. And I think in today's world, like, we now see, like, manhood can be expressed in so many different ways. You know, a lot of guys wear nail polish now, a lot of guys wear skirts, you know, you came in with a scarf, like, who cares? But people do care. Some people do. Mm-hmm. And I think traditionally, like, we're moving beyond that. What I think is important is people to start to learn and start to understand what areas of my life am I not quite where I want to be? And I think you're right. I think it's a continual process. You asked, are you there yet? There is no there.
Mm.
I think that's what's really important. It's we're always growing. We're always learning. We're always changing. And I do want to say one thing that I think is super important. And that is there's a lot of quotes you'll see about the comfort zone is where things go to die. And I think, you know, as a fellow seeker with Albert and with you and with the people that are around us, being a little uncomfortable is where we truly feel alive. So it's super important.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one of the things that came to mind as you were asking the question, and here I am trying to answer, and I'm finding myself humming and humming. I saw a video recently of Anthony Robbins. Anthony Robbins, you know, is the guru, the master of coaches, who sort of single-handedly shaped the whole field. And there's a great video online of him speaking to Russell Brand, and he says, you know, every morning I go into the cold plunge and I don't negotiate with myself. I'm not here to negotiate with myself. And he says, there's not a single morning where I feel like going in there, but it doesn't matter how much I don't feel like going in there, I go in there, right? I don't, you know, I don't give myself any excuses. I don't give myself time. I just go straight in there. I have a cold plunge in the morning. I have a cold plunge at home.
It's cool. Nice.
And, it took me 25 minutes to get in there this morning.
Albert, since when do you have the...
A cold plunge?
Yeah.
On and off for years.
But you have... I find that really, really interesting. I've been trying to... I mean, at my place, I think it's... I need to logistically find a way to do it. But I find it really impressive. And then you do it... Try to do it at least every morning.
Yes. So I tell myself, first thing in the morning, I'm going to get up and I'm going to go straight in the cold plunge. And sometimes I manage to do it. I go straight in without a thought.
Okay, sometimes. But
most of the time, it's like, oh my God. And I really list through my mind excuses that I may find legitimate. This is a good reason not to do it.
Yep.
Right? And I go through them and I try and I avoid. And I almost didn't go this morning. Almost didn't go.
But you did go.
But I did. But yeah. And once I'm in, it's like, why was it so hard? Yeah. Why was it so hard to get me in here? It's so good.
Well, I mean, you really are getting into the power of the mind there. And I think, you know, we'll definitely talk about that another day too. Ego, mind, very important. But like you did do it, which
I
is
did.
Cool.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, you mentioned consistency and discipline. And what I see in a lot, I definitely am very curious. I talk to a lot of women about things and about the state of manhood and where we're at. And I get a lot of disappointment. And I get disappointment because women are just like, couldn't the guy just be honest with me? You know, even yesterday I was... speaking to a friend of mine, her friend was texting her nonstop about some guy she was dating, and they were supposed to have a second date, and the guy ghosted her.
Mm.
And then when she called him on it, he's like, oh, actually, I had a hair appointment I forgot about. Like, just total bullshit, right? Like, and she was like, she was starving. Like, could you just say, like, you're not interested, or you don't want to see me, or you with him? Like, just be honest, be consistent, right, be disciplined. Right. And I think a lot of women are looking for that for men. One of the topics we brought up, Albert, a lot is like the hesitant male. You know, in the world today, there's a lot of interplay, as we know, with the power of women now, like, and rightfully so. But I think that there's some dichotomies there, and we've gone to places where it's trickled into relationships a lot as well.
Well, probably right? This guy there's a fear element. He's afraid of her. He's afraid of her response.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he's avoidant in different ways and tries to sort of make different excuses. And then, of course, the woman only gets frustrated. But what would have happened, you know, had he just said straight up, listen, I'm sorry, I'm not interested.
Well, she could have trusted him then. Now she can trust him.
Sure. Yeah. But she might have also, you know, had a reaction that would have caused an effect in him that would have intimidated him, and he didn't want to face that.
Right? Yeah. But I mean, courage to me is a big part of healthy masculinity as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And one of my teachers talks a lot about don't operate with a fear of outcome.
You know, right.
And even, I got to be honest, like as everybody knows, I'm dating, which is a whole other story. But about dating, like when I'm out and I want to approach a woman, I am afraid. I'm afraid of rejection for sure. And I did an interesting exercise once with a men's group where they said, just stand in front of a partner and ask for just a whole bunch of stuff. And the other person's job is to say no. And so basically, you know, like, I want a boat. No. I want a new car. No. I want to be taller. No. And it didn't, obviously it didn't bother us at all. And he just pointed out that your attachment to the outcome of her saying yes, it makes you suffer. So it is interesting to like disconnect from the outcome. And I always say, I'm not there yet. I try to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Do the right thing. And I do tell, I have someone running my company now, and I tell her, keep doing the right thing. Do the right thing, and then do the right thing again, and then do the right thing again without fear. And I think fear, you know, is a big part of why men, they kind of like go around the edges. They're not as direct, maybe.
But I have so many examples of moments in which I've tried to please. I feel like I was going to please the person in saying, yes, for example, we're going to go on a date, or yes, I'm going to do this. But then knowing it was not necessarily going to happen. But that's the scenario, I think, in which we need to address and change, right? As you mentioned, we need to be truthful.
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be a reaction anyways, right? You mentioned last time, maybe the girl was going to be mad about the situation and then react. She probably would have reacted in either way, whether he lied or said the truth. But I think the end result is at least you were truthful and you ended up.
Yes, yes, of course.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I see this because we often target things that we shouldn't do. And I find myself loving these situations, not doing the right thing. Then after reflecting on it and being like, oh, like, this could have been avoided by simply living to my truth. And
yeah, I mean, there's a great quote by Jordan Peterson that says, when we tell the truth, whatever happens is the best thing that could have happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if it, you know, bothers us or disturbs us or frightens us in some way, it's the best alternative or, you know, that we could have possibly seen.
It's the mental cold plunge that you have to...
Right, exactly.
You have to face in that instant.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. So, but I'm curious about what that guy would have been afraid of.
Right.
Because I know I have that fear as well.
Sure.
There's something in the feminine that does, in certain places, quite scare me. And it's not something I understand very well. Like, what in me is so threatened by that? And what is that really that's scaring me so much? Right? Yeah. What is it in men that is so terrified of something in women? Right? Because which guy is honest with himself is not going to say at some level he's not afraid of women. Yeah. Like, are we afraid of a certain kind of mother figure? Oh, you know, it's more than just rejection. It's like the rejection is like it's like the destruction of our being in some way. It's not a momentary rejection that we face. We suddenly feel this total unworthiness.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And lack of value and or something. What is? I mean, I guess it's something to explore. I don't have the specific answers. I'm sensing something, but
yeah.
But there's,
you know, well, one of the authors I follow is Dr. Glover, who did No More Mr. Nice Guy, and he'll say a lot of nice guys. I mean, if you've had some trauma in your past or you're a nice guy, nice guys look for validation externally from women. We're dying to just be, and I've talked about this a bit.
No, but not just nice guys. Which guy does not want women to validate him?
Yeah, yeah.
Who doesn't want that? Who doesn't want girls to be like, wow, that guy?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there's even that stigma when you don't have a girl, like I'm facing now, right? Where I feel, sometimes I do feel like, oh boy, like...
I don't exist.
I'm losing.
Women don't see me, I don't exist.
Yeah, I don't exist, I'm losing, whatever. Yeah. And when a woman that I'm attracted to, like, thinks I'm cool, I'm like, ooh. You know, you do definitely feel better. There's no doubt about it.
Yes, yeah. We're definitely influenced by the female gaze.
Yeah.
Like, strongly.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you know, let's not pretend that we're not and be men about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's actually.
Shouldn't I mean, I guess we all know that we technically, I think, shouldn't, but we are all at the end of the day to some extent, right? As you just mentioned, if you get complimented by a girl, it's inevitable. Most guys are going to be like, "Oh, like I feel great. This is awesome." But at the same time, just coming back to that, it might not be the same topic, but about purpose, right? Like, a girl usually, or woman, or the feminine energy, is looking for someone who has a vision and who's not concerned necessarily or only focused on that specific person. So that's, I think, the ideal where we should go. But then, as you mentioned, we always have that set of us who's like trying to get that validation from that other person.
Wait, could you say that again? I missed the first bit.
Yeah, the first bit is, I was saying that feminine energy tends to usually look for someone who has his own ideas, his own way of being, at least on the perspective that I checked from the way of the superior man, right? For example, you have your own purpose, you have your own ideas, and then you bring your feminine energy or your woman with you on that adventure. It's not her, she's not the focus. But then, as you mentioned, we always have that side on us who's trying also sometimes to get validation, then that might change our path. That's the way I sometimes feel when taking decisions. So,
I mean, those are the ideals, you know, and the deeper essence, I think, of femininity and masculinity. But then in the way that we live our lives, you know, women may not even know that that's what they want, you know?
True.
Right? Yeah. For example, my ex-girlfriend, after we broke up, so I had a relationship for, you know, 7-8 years, and we broke up after last summer, essentially, you know, sort of, it was a messy breakup, like on and off for a little bit, but then officially probably around September. And what she wanted was, she was saying to me, you don't have time for me, right? I want to be in love, she was saying. I want to be in a romantic relationship. She wanted to be adored. And so she found a guy to give her that, right? A guy that just venerates her, worships her, and made her at the very center of her life. And for a few months, she was super happy.
But then
all of a sudden, it's like, well, this guy doesn't exist outside of me. It's like, where is this guy?
Yeah.
Who are you? Hello.
It's like, what's your life about? Like, you know, it's like he's making me his everything. And then all of a sudden, she's losing respect for him.
Yes.
Right? And she's like, the universe is laughing at me. The universe gave me what I wanted, but finally, it's not really what is fulfilling me, right?
I'm glad you said that. That's a really strong story that just validates everything I've ever read about this, which is like, it sounds good in theory, and it's very movie-like, but first of all, when you put someone on a pedestal, it's not equal.
Yeah.
So that's not love. Love's equal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, women in the end will lose respect, just like you said, Manny. They will lose respect for their men if they drooling about them all the time. I've seen it a million times. Mm-hmm. I had a few guy clients with my coaching practice, Albert, where guys would be like, no, I brought her flowers every day. And I picked her up from work every day. And it's like, well, when were you doing your mission? When were you doing your purpose?
Right.
And so let me ask you, we'll switch gears a bit, but let me ask you, as someone who is out in the world, and as I've mentioned, to me, you seem very balanced between your energies. With what's gone on in the world the last, let's say, 10, 15 years, with the shifts towards, you know, there's a lot of discussion around women embracing their power, and these are great things. Hopefully it gets more and more, we can be more and more equal. But I do believe that some of this has bled into relationship. And now we have women that maybe are a little more operating in their masculine. What do you think that's kind of the state of the world on all this? Like, where do you sit on all that?
I mean, we each have our own perspective onto the world according to the things that we do. I operate in a very, very feminine environment. Okay. The work environments that I've been working in over the last 20 years have been female dominated. Right, you know, because I've been teaching yoga, and it's very, very, very feminine. Even the coaching world, you know, and the workshops that I do, the family constellation workshops, I always am struggling to find enough men to participate in the workshops. Right, they're predominantly women. Women are more inclined towards self development, self reflection, and so because this is the work that I do, then I see mostly women. I'm surrounded by mostly women. Yesterday.
Oh, that sucks.
Well, there's pros and cons.
Yeah, for sure.
What would you say it's the case? You did mention women are more into personal development. Would you say in that specific area, like for example, in yoga?
I mean, on a side note, I don't understand why guys who are looking for girls just don't go do more yoga.
Right.
It's truly 80% girls, and you know, so many of them are just gorgeous, right? If you're looking for a girl, go to a yoga class.
Sure.
And definitely the way that our bodies are conditioned, you know, since we're very young, the way we learn to move our bodies as men is very different than the way women are taught to move their bodies. And so a yoga class is much more confronting for a guy, much more awkward, much more uncomfortable than it is for a girl. Just like, you know, a lot of girls can't really throw a baseball properly. It's really amazing. It seems like a very simple movement.
Wow, I never thought about it that way, but you're so right. I do yoga and I feel like I can't breathe. Brutal. I tell my girl I feel so uncomfortable.
Of course you do. It's and it really takes a, it's much more demanding for the average guy to do yoga than it is for the average girl.
Yeah.
Because the very way that we've been, we don't realize how much conditioning our bodies.
But you know what's interesting? Sorry, I do want to interrupt because I think it's important. And I need to do this because on behalf of my Winnipeg softball women that I've played with, women that are conditioned to move like men can zip a baseball. It's just that generally in the past, they weren't trained to do that.
No, they
that.
Were not. Most women were not. Of
back
course,
in the day.
If, even now, even today. Even today. And this is one of the positive aspects, you might say, of the questions collectively we have over gender roles.
Right.
Right? Now, something has tipped over the deep end and gone too far. But we don't realize just how much conditioning, social conditioning there is for men to be men in certain ways and for women to be women
in certain ways. Sure.
And even in the way that we move. So the average woman cannot throw a baseball. She just can't. She just does this. And it's we don't realize how that simple movement is trained into us as men, you know, for generations, right? So, you know, my ex-girlfriend's father trains horses. And, you know, we see horses. If we don't know horses, I don't know anything about horses. We see horses jump over moats. We see horses jump over fences. That's not a natural movement. Horses cannot do that normally. They have to be trained. But a horse, if you try to train the movement, cannot do it. In its lifetime, a horse cannot be trained to jump over a fence. But they start the training and they get it as close as they can to do it. And then its offspring has registered a certain level of information, and then its offspring can do it, right? Wow. So it takes two generations to train a horse to jump over a fence. So we have generations of conditioning on how to move our bodies, right, as men and as women. And so we become very different sort of physical entities, right? And, you know, this is why men are much better, have a much better sense of orientation, right? This is, you know, and women are much better at multitasking, right? And they're attributing this to, you know, way back into sort of Stone Age times when men were out, you know, hunting, right? And they had to orient themselves in the forest, and women were at home taking care of all of the tasks of and the many, many and very important tasks of tending the, you know, the...
And organizing stuff. I don't know if...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, how many men have the experience, and I've had this over and over and over again, and there's so many now YouTubes making jokes about it, of you're in the kitchen and you're looking for something and you can't find it, and you call your partner, you call your girlfriend, you call your wife, where is it, where's this thing? And she comes in and it's like right there in the counter, right in front of your nose. Right? But she couldn't see it, it was right there. And then with annoyance, she has to, you know, she pointed out to you.
Yeah.
This ways that we're trained very, very deeply. And so that influence is so profound. Some of it positive and some of it not so positive. And so it's valuable to re-question, you know, some of these aspects, but where is that taking us? Now there's something being fragmented. We're getting a little lost, right? We're getting a little lost in what it is to be a man and what it is to be a woman. And we're seeing it collectively in how difficult relationships are.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
You feel like some of that polarity is gone in terms of the classic masculine energy and feminine energy?
Well, what's being re-questioned, and as it's being re-questioned, yes, we're losing a sense of it. And you know, I guess it's stages of growth, you might say, right? Because it's true that when these energies are out of balance, either the masculine energy or the feminine energy, they get very, very ugly. Right, so we spoke about all the positive aspects of masculinity, but then there's the negative aspects of masculinity, and this is what is being associated as masculinity collectively.
I totally agree. 100%.
Right now, when we speak of masculinity, you know, we associate it with all sorts of the negative traits, dominance,
controlling, abusive, rage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Right, and so then this is what people associate, you know, as with the patriarchy. The patriarchy is sort of this awful word now, right? People suffer from the patriarchy. And there's nothing, people see nothing inherently good with the principle of patriarchy, right? Patriarchy has become a very, very a negative, bad word. But is it really in its essence, right? When it's out of balance, sure. But what could it be when it's balanced? And even now, even though we're trying to reaffirm healthy masculinity, right? It's a quest, right? And why is it a quest? Well, because even as men, we've suffered from negative masculinity,
right? Right.
And we're trying to undo the effects of that and draw out of it the positive aspects of it. You know, my father was from the south of Egypt, right? The south of Egypt, they're called Sa'idis, right? And even in Egypt, Sa'idis have a reputation for being extremely stubborn, extremely patriarchal, extremely dominant. And, you know, well, even when I was young, I was amazed by the difference in going into a Canadian home, right? And how people spoke to their parents or how their father spoke to them. And, right, it was a different planet. And, you know, the level of respect that I had to show my father and the level of command, he really truly ruled the household. And by the time I was a teenager, I couldn't take it anymore. I was really suffocating. I had no room to, you know, to carve my own path. And so by the time I was 19, we were fighting so much that, you know, we stopped speaking for a little bit. And I was just so angry with him. I could see nothing good in the way that he raised me. And then years later, I began teaching. I began teaching yoga classes. And, you know, I started a whole career path. And I discovered I had access to an inner authority in me. I had a way of watching over the group, guiding the group, protecting the group, a voice that secured everybody, that allowed everybody to relax, open up, feel vulnerable, and tap into parts of themselves that they don't give themselves permission because they felt safe. And for the first time in my life, I was grateful for the way my father raised me. But I had drawn out an inner sense of authority that was a direct result of the authority that I had been subjected to. I knew how to guide. And even today, it's one of the things that people will say about the workshops that I lead. They suddenly feel protected by a strong, loving, masculine guidance, right? And it's one of my biggest assets.
Which you would say it was what you went through with your father, but at that time...
It's like I digested it properly. I was able to, from the way that he was with me, I could be an authority, but I could be the authority that the quality and the color of it that would be the way I would like it to be.
Yeah,
the way
in your own self, basically. Liked, yes.
He transformed it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was,
to a degree.
It's not so much that I transformed it, it's I just shifted the angle of it.
Yeah.
I had so little to do. It was a gift that I'd been given, you know, to be able to lead, yeah. Right? And I would never have had that. I would never have had that if it wasn't for the way that he raised me. Yeah. And then I saw it differently. I really saw it differently. I really saw that he did it out of love, right? That was the purpose and the intention and the direction of it. It wasn't an ego trip. It wasn't him sort of, you know, drinking up a sense of power. No, no, no. Not at all. Not at all. It was in his culture, the way we raised the boys, the way we gave them love, right? And there was a transmission taking place. Of course, it wasn't perfect. You know, nothing is perfect, but it was a tremendous gift, yeah. Right? And it was really me learning how to receive it, right? Coming out of, oh, I wish it had been more like that, and oh, there was too much of that, and really just taking in how it was as it was given to me so that then I could do something with it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, like, so I had a lot of issues with my father, and when I look back and I see a lot of the gifts that I was given, what I realized with him, a lot of what he was operating from was fear. So he was always worried that something was going to happen to me. So he tried to like push me and beat me to, I use the term beat me to greatness.
I mean, right? Listen to what you're saying.
You know,
he was worried that something would happen to you. And so he responded in that way.
Yeah.
It's not just fear.
Yeah.
That's also
there's
love.
There's love too. Yeah.
There's a lot of love.
Yeah, I mean, in our work, we've done some of the constellation work together, and we'll talk about that a little bit at the end. Not too.
He
too
wanted
much,
to protect you from certain
protect
things.
Me. Yeah,
yeah.
He just did it in a way that was not
like you would have liked it to be.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. But I think you're raising a really important point. I want to go back to what you said, which is masculinity. The reason for this podcast is the very thing that masculinity has been intertwined with the word toxic. they're melded together.
Yes.
And we're losing the baby with the bathwater to some degree. And, you know, one of the things I'll mention to give you an example of that caring masculine leading along, you know, in my dating world, like I usually set the first date. I say, like, look, I know where to go. I'll pick a joint. I'll meet you at this time. And every single woman I've dated, I've dated that much, they've always said, you know what? I really love that you picked the place, because I make decisions all day and I'm exhausted. And it's so nice to have a man actually step up and do that. And I think what happens with a lot of guys, like, and I hear women say it all the time, when they're with a guy who's like, I don't know, what do you want to do? I don't know, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
The attraction just goes down. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to go back and discuss this a little bit. You did say something about things have gone maybe a bit too far. I agree with you. I think again, some things have been lost in translation. Women to me have been bombarded heavily with the message of be independent, which is great. You don't need a man.
Mm.
And what's happened though is now it's become where women don't really appreciate the, like, a great relationship, the two energies. That's why people get in a relationship, when they're really flowing. And it doesn't matter who takes which pole. But I was just curious on your take on where we are today with all of this, you know, some of this, these shifts that have gone on.
I mean, it's hard for me, you know, for me to speak for others, right? But from the perspective that I see, like I started to say, I just see a lot of conflict in relationships. You know, it's a rare thing now that people don't get divorced. It's like suddenly when you hear of a couple that are raising children and they're still together, you know, it's a surprise. We are now expecting, you know, people to come apart. And then you see the deep challenges that people face in relationships, and we're unable to get over those challenges. I find that heartbreaking. Why is it so difficult for us? I don't really know. I don't really know. Is the model fundamentally impossible? Right? Is it when we look back at previous generations and couples stay together, we see them staying together but in misery, right? We don't really see them
not
happy.
In love.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And was that necessary? Maybe they just didn't have the tools to transmute, you know, the challenges between them, so they just learned to cohabitate with them. Or is it better for us to come apart at a certain stage and move on to a different partner at different stages of our lives? That doesn't sound quite right to me either. I'm not sure why. I don't know. Certainly I see in myself and in other men a certain fear of the feminine, like I mentioned, and I see in women a residual anger towards the men, right? And when men demonstrate masculine strength and power, a lot of women are triggered by that. They're bothered by it. And so when a man tries to assert his masculine strength, you know, he meets with this resistance, the feminine resistance.
Yeah.
Today there's a lot of, backlash and resistance, definitely, in terms of...
Yeah, you know, there's this term that came about, right, called mansplaining, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that there are moments when it's really legitimate, where there are certain men that will, you know, will disregard a woman's point of view just because it's a woman, right? And then at that moment, he's mansplaining. But then it got used for... You know, it got twisted every time a man tries to speak up legitimately, speaking his truth, right? And it may contradict a woman present. Well, then suddenly he's claimed to be mansplaining, right? And he's discredited just for being a man. And we see that in the woke culture, right? I took a course at Concordia last year, right? And I suddenly felt the stigma of being a man, right? And, you know, even a white-skinned man, even though my I'm culturally... ethnic, right? But I'm white passing, you might say, right? So people
you're
assume,
white enough. You're
yeah,
white enough.
I'm my skin is white, right? I mean, I don't feel white in that sense, right? I'm not Anglo-Saxon, right? Although I function in an Anglo-Saxon world, but I really felt a sense of danger, like I in the way that I had I had I was on alert, right? I couldn't look at people a certain way.
You were not in the right place.
Communicate in a certain way.
You were not necessarily welcomed. That's in Concordia. That's something huge right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm curious. So what were your thoughts on that class that you took there? And
it was, I thought the culture was very, very uncomfortable. I thought it was toxic. Yeah, it was toxic. Okay. I think I felt the culture, the work culture is sick. It's like a disease. It's not well. That's what it comes across.
Here's my take on it.
And people are suffering it, and they don't know that they're suffering.
It's a lot of anger
because,
in there.
Because they feel they're legitimizing something and empowering themselves, but they're enabling a suffering within them that never gets a chance to be fully, you know, integrated and transformed. Like the whole idea of getting upset and offended because someone is not referring to you in the way you would like to be referred to is truly ludicrous. It's ill-founded. You know, we should be teaching people to feel a sense of inner empowerment despite, regardless of how others are perceiving them, right? A kind of independence towards other people's gaze onto them, right? Rather than try to imagine that if everybody is referring to you in the way that you or want to be referred to, then somehow you're validated. You're invalidated, actually, because you're dependent on other people's gaze. And that's something we have no control over. So you're completely disempowered, right? You have no inner power to self-regulate, right? You're just subjected to outside forces, right? So it's a disaster. It's extremely disempowering to people that participate in that and believe in that kind of process, right?
I totally agree in terms of the seeking validation. It's a very good point.
Yeah.
Do you guys think that this is a phase that we're going through or something that's just going to last just a little while? Or this is something that's building into... Because I also believe this is a toxic...
I'm going to say a couple of things about this because I really want to tackle this because one of the things about our podcast that I'd like to do is have it be open, honest, and organic. And, you know, some people will freak out with what you just said, by the way.
Yeah.
And that debate should take place about what you talked about, but not you as a person. Because what I'm seeing...
Let me just clarify it.
Yeah.
If, for example, I want you to use a certain pronoun to refer to me, I can make that request of you.
100%.
And that's a legitimate request.
100%.
But if my sense of well-being depends on you using it or
not. I see your point.
Yeah.
Now you're a victim of me.
Agree. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. You're giving your power away. And I totally agree with that part of it. What I wanted to say is...
But we can debate. You're saying we can debate. We can talk about
but
these don't, things.
But what happens is, and this is Manny... I'm sorry to interrupt, man. This is where I get on my horse. What really frustrates me and is really difficult in the world, you will not solve the world's problems by perpetuating anger and hate and just flipping it back the other direction. We need to get into like more connection, more love, more understanding. But... my point would be swear, scream, have that debate, but about the topic. What happens usually is, well, you're a misogynistic asshole. They talk about you as a person, not the topic. Mm-hmm. So where's the curiosity in that? Where if somebody were here that took issue with that, they could say, well, you know, Albert, that's an interesting, like, why do you feel that way? And here's how I feel. And when you start explaining how do you feel, how do I feel, you move closer. Mm-hmm. And you know, I haven't got into it yet. We'll probably do a talk about nonviolent communication at some point by my namesake, Marshall Rosenberg. But what I'm realizing is people attack each other. They don't talk about the actual subject. Mm-hmm. And so when we get into, you know, I personally don't prescribe to, like, I don't even want to call people woke or not woke. What I would say is anyone who's using anger, who's spreading more anger, more hate, more disdain, I don't think that's going to make the world a better place.
Yes, certainly. Right? But they don't know that they're spreading anger. They believe in an idea
that they think...
They believe they're spreading compassion.
Yeah.
They believe they're being empathetic. They believe they are helping communities that are disregarded by the collective, by the society.
Yeah.
Right? And so they feel protective in a way.
Yeah.
Right. So they have no idea in the moment that they're being, you know, hateful.
Yeah. Well, you've hit on a really important point though, because like at the end of the day, like a lot of this comes from fear. And I mentioned on an earlier podcast, unfortunately, it sucks, but many, many, many women have been hurt by men.
Certainly.
And so in that case, they don't trust us. And the purpose of our podcast is to open people's minds and hopefully have men begin one journey. There's the one journey on here. Whether you disagree with what we said on this podcast or not, the one journey I hope we can all agree on is if more men healed, the world would be a better place. How's that for a theory?
Well, I don't like it.
Okay.
Because
I mean, more
men
people
have
in
been
general.
Hurt by men.
Yeah.
As much as women have been hurt by men. Yeah. You know? But the toxic masculinity has created serious trauma and hurt.
Yeah.
Collectively for both men and women.
Yes.
But there is also such a thing as toxic femininity.
Sure.
Right? And, you know, there's a kind of balance, right, between masculinity and femininity. And that's what we're seeking. There's no such thing as masculinity that isn't in direct relationship with femininity and femininity in relationship with masculinity. And so the you know, it's the principle of yin-yang. They are intrinsically interwoven. They can't be divided. So we can't speak about masculinity without, you know, inferring femininity and vice versa. So we can't, you know, say the world will be a better place if men heal. Certainly, of course, the world will be a better place if men heal. Right, but men can't heal with women not healing.
Of course,
it's something that we need to do together.
Yeah.
But then we can't heal our masculinity if we don't internally as well heal our femininity.
True.
And the two meet in a certain way.
Yeah.
And somehow our masculinity is healed by our femininity, and our femininity is healed by our masculinity. Right, and that's that delicate balance that you know we're seeking and we want to strive for. You know, when you said to me earlier as we began, you seem to me as someone that has a nice balance between the masculine and the feminine. That's, you know, it's such a gorgeous compliment.
Yeah,
you know, it's like
sure.
one of the most beautiful sure. compliments you can give someone,
sure.
right? I don't really know what you're seeing when you say that, mm-hmm. right? And so that might be something interesting to discuss, right? Because I don't feel internally that I've found that balance quite yet, yeah. right?
You were saying... With what you were saying, Dave, I sensed that you were saying that because men, we tend to have a harder time to look inwards and to
right.
heal. We tend to go perpetuate violence and stuff like that.
Yeah. Let me back.
But I mean, I totally agree in the sense that we both need to act. We work together at the end of the day, feminine and masculine. Yeah. We work together. So if it's only one side helping, then.
Yeah, I'll backtrack. So like what I meant was, and what I mean by that is I was getting across and validating the purpose of this podcast. I don't believe it's probably a good play for me to go out there and say like, okay, women, I'm going to lead you to all heal. Like you all need to heal. Like let's do better work together. I will do workshops with women. I hope someday I've many of my clients are women, but as I feel like the best,
I see what you mean.
The best way I can help is to get the discussion going for men as a man.
Yes.
That's like, I also feel like any of the communities that I'm not really a part of, like, you know, we'll take like the queer community, like for me to go and I haven't walked in their shoes, but I guess what I could say is as a man who's experienced extreme toxic masculinity as a child, who's done some toxic masculinity behaviors, like we all probably have at some point, someone who's on a bit of a journey to discuss and balance his masculine and feminine. I'm hoping by sharing that, we can help maybe some of the guys that we'll reach and some of the women as well. We'll just start to look inward because you said something important. You said 80, 90%, like self-help, looking inward, guys aren't naturally going there. And hopefully we can inspire some to maybe begin the journey.
Yeah, know? Well, there's more and more. There are movements. There are masculine movements.
Yeah.
You know, where it's happening and guys are coming together. So yesterday I went to take a Muay Thai boxing class.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Right. I've been wanting to do this for ages and I went and it was so, I walked in there and I was like, whoa, this is a guy's environment. This is a masculine environment. Right.
Yeah.
And the whole flavor of it was unfamiliar to me. Right.
Ah.
It's just not the world that I operate in.
Yeah.
Right. And it was good for me. Right. You know, and I realized that I realized And as I'm speaking about it, it's becoming clear to me that because my upbringing was so intense with my father, when I was a teenager, I couldn't handle authority figures. I couldn't handle bosses. I couldn't work for anybody. Like, I would freak out. I'd be a spaz, right? Someone would try to say a little thing, you know, just do this. And in a legitimate way, I'd be like, you know, I'd react to them. I'd freak out. I would feel overly dominant. I had a distortion, right? I saw my father in every possible authority figure.
Yep.
And so I think eventually I was like, fuck that. I'm not going to interact with men. At some level, I think I was afraid of men. And so I just naturally was drawn to feminine environments and I found my place there.
Hmm.
And so now I think I have to I have the work to do to reconnect to a different quality of manhood, of masculine environments that's really unfamiliar. I never played sports, probably for the same reason.
Yeah.
Right?
Did you sense a sense of familiarity with after finishing your boxing class, or it was really something new and like
it was totally new. Like, wow. No, it was new. It's like it's gonna take time for me.
Are you gonna go back and
yeah. I mean, I got a, you know, there was a free week.
Oh, cool.
Right, and so I'll try that out and try to bring that in. But definitely, so what I'm realizing is that men need to meet in the way men meet, right? And I think that for a lot of men, the healing world is overly feminine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Men will may be more open to the journey of self-reflection, healing, if it's in the context of men and not like women.
Yeah.
Right? So women will come together and they'll talk and things like that. Men, I think, need to do more than just talk.
Yeah.
Right?
Some action involved.
They need to move, you know, they need to wrestle. They need physical sort of challenges, right? You know, a kind of bonding experience amongst brothers kind of thing.
Yeah.
Need to meet challenges. Yeah. I mean, once upon a time, right, you know, in order to become a man, you had to go through a rite of passage. And the rite of passage is, you know, if you've ever read on these rite of passages of tribal societies, they risk death.
Yeah.
Right? They were, it's not like a beautiful sort of just, yeah, we're going to light a candle, sing kumbaya, right? Do you know what I mean? Some of them died. Right, and so these young boys went in there not knowing if they'd make it out and who among them, you know, would not make it out, because usually one of them did not, right? That's just terrifying, right? So you went through this absolutely terrifying experience, and after that, you were different. You were different, yeah. Right? You were a man. Your whole psychic structure had shifted, right? And we don't have that. So I think we're perpetually as feel like boys. Right, in our psyche, we don't know how to fully like move into the sense of manhood and adulthood, where we're fully taking responsibility for ourselves and we don't have this dependence on the feminine, right?
Yeah,
I'm curious in your relationship, the long relationship you had, did you ever feel some sort of pressure to be, you know, necessarily more manly or having to?
Definitely. There was a lot of pressure. There was a lot of sexual pressure, actually, especially at the beginning of this. Now, this woman was highly, highly sexual, super, super attractive, and knew it. Like, you know, a lot of women don't know how beautiful they are, even though they're very, very beautiful. She was beautiful, and she knew it, and she loved the male gaze. She loved being looked at. She loved being admired. Right, and she threw it at people. So you know when you see women down the street and you look at them and you have the sense that if you look at them and they see you looking at them, that you violated them in some way, right? That you're we're seeing this right, like videos popping up about guys looking over at girls in gyms and they're filming it and then
yeah, I saw some of these.
It's you know, it's a natural thing for men to look at women. But now we're somehow being taught that our gaze is aggressive
and even our violating. Desire is not allowed.
Yes. Yeah. So we're very confused. Yeah. It confuses us as men. We don't know what to do with these natural instincts, right? But this woman here, she was different. She invited the male gaze. So what would happen is that, you know, if guys would sort of kind of look at her and she'd sense that she'd energetically draw the gaze in, guys would go crazy. Everywhere she went, the guys would follow her, give her number, reach out to her everywhere. And so here I am with this woman, and she's highly sexual. She's had lots of sexual partners. I suddenly felt, you know, the pressure to perform, right? And and it shook me, right? And I had to really like, okay, what am I going to do with this, right? And I had to find my center and really just sort of draw up from within me what I wanted to be there and not let myself be intimidated, right?
Yeah.
And I found it, and it went really, really well. But it's hard to describe. I felt like I'm still susceptible to that. Yeah. You know, I haven't quite figured it out, right?
You nailed it though. You said something super important, which is you found your center. Most guys don't usually do that. You know, you to be able to be there for the woman no matter what happens, independent of how she is and what's going on, to be grounded, centered, solid. That's what you did, which is a really important way of being for, you know, the new masculinity. To me, that's a big part of it, you know, as we look forward to like what that looks like, you know.
Yeah.
Question for you. One of the things I'm interested in, I always use this analogy, like it's kind of funny. Guys are like unbelievably precise about some guys. They know every spec on their car, right? Or they know every bit about their bike. Yeah. Carbon fiber, these tires, that tires.
Yeah.
They know everything about their golf clubs. This, you know, this lie angle, this da, 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 3/4-inch grip. Blah, blah, blah. But they don't look at their own user's manual. They don't. And why do you think a lot of men struggle to do the inner work or look in? I think a lot of people do. It seems like more women, as you said, are at these self-help seminars and doing this work. You know, some of our work we've done together. These are really good questions. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's the generational conditioning. You know, men were meant to be the ground. Men were meant to be the stable element. And if a man is always questioning himself, he can't be that.
Right.
You know, women have the permission to be in motion, to be emotional. But, you know, they have their cycle every month. Their emotions are, whether they want to or not, are going through these intense, you know, movements. And so they are supported by a presence that remains stable for them, right? If a man is doing all of this deep inner questioning, how can he remain stable? By the nature of this work, you are going into instability. You're re-questioning what you are, right? So that you can create some motion, so that you can create some change. So
I think you just explained why I'm single. Because I think sometimes, like, I'm always seeking and learning and, like, trying new things and recreating myself. And maybe the reason I haven't been able to keep something is because I lack that stability. Huh. So you just freaked me out on my own podcast. Thanks. I really got to think about that. I'm like, shit.
Yeah. Men or other generations are conditioned not to change.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what happens when there's a need to change?
Right.
It's a very difficult, you know, new motion to learn. Like going into a yoga class is very tough for a guy, right? Because you're moving your body in ways the masculine body's not used to moving, and so you have to face that discomfort in order to get into the yoga class and then access something new, right? So at a psychological level, It's a new kind of posturing, you know, that we're asking of men, but it shifts something so deep, right, in being a man that, you know, I think collectively men are just disinclined to do that, right? Unless it's happening in very, very masculine environments, right? It's happening. I follow some people on Instagram, even in Montreal. I've been meaning to send you. You know, there are groups of like men in fitness that are also going into coaching, and they do these big groups. Well, they'll do a lot of fitness, but also some you know, motivational stuff along with it. And I mean, when you think of the tradition of martial arts, right? That's beautiful. Masculine inner work that's happening through discipline, through perseverance, and when you see people emerge out of that, they express that beautiful, healthy masculinity we're all looking for.
Yeah.
Right. So those traditions, I think, are the avenues that, you know, are accessible and viable for men, right?
Cool.
And then in that context, I think men are open to that inner work and growth, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Right on, man. Well,
that was very, very cool. Interesting. Albert, very, really appreciate you getting your perspective on this.
Yeah, we're close to done. Yeah, we're going to wrap it up. I think it was, it was really illuminating. I think some really interesting points that'll be controversial, which it is what it is. And what I would just say to anybody who thinks things are controversial with our show is we're here to talk and we're here to be open and be curious. And if you're upset, or if something you did vehemently disagree with, come on the show. Like, let's have a chat about it.
Let's debate. Let's talk about it. Yeah. I think we need to grow together. And we need to have these discussions. So we really appreciate this. As always, comments. We want to have everyone involved. So, you know, we spoke about this. We want to read comments, get people involved with this podcast. So please don't forget to leave comments in the video. And Albert, thank you so much for
thank you for coming here.
Thanks so much, Albert. Okay.
Thanks, Dave.
Take care, everyone. Thanks.
Right, see you soon.
Bye-bye. Ciao. Mm-hmm.